Part 4. The Life of Sky. A View Under Weston's Wing. Donna can't believe it. Sally Weston is going to be her personal mentor. Sally Weston. And what's more, Sally Weston is inviting a select group of candidates to her really big house. And further to that, we then cut to an exterior shot of this really big house. And in case we're still unsure of how really big this house is, after the shot of the candidates entering its really big hall, one of the candidates says, "This is a really big house." The mise-en-scene is impeccable. Barreto's camera joins Weston as she stands at the top of a double staircase. She looks down on our would-be flight attendants, her view literally from the top, while the song Up, Up and Away by the Fifth Dimension subtextually thwacks any nails not yet hit squarely on their heads by the audible gasps. In the following dining room scene, which operates as an exponential multiplier of both exposition and eyelines, we are able to hear about how Sally reached her vaulted position. She met her handsome husband, Jack Weston, Chad Everett, in first class. He asked for a surfeit of warm nuts, and she realised that what he wanted wasn't safe to put in a microwave. His face blending seamlessly with his fitted leather jacket, Jack looked like he'd rather be wrestling a steer than interact with Randy Jones, Joshua Molina, the crew's comic relief. When Randy asked to be treated as just one of the girls, Jack's eyes visibly dim. It's a fun moment and taps into the truth of how uncomfortable it is to be suddenly confronted in one's own home with an insistent homosexual. What must make it even more galling is that Jack built this home himself, using hands that are as adept at felling a log as cupping the breast of a new secretary, hands that have touched no penis other than his own, and only then to uncork a jet of steaming piss or to purposefully guide his gift into a Playmate of the Year's glistening cove. It's a shame we don't get to see more of Jack and his barely contained disgust. This scene is his swan song. What we see more of, though, is the connection between Sally Weston and Jensen. Even though Weston and Jensen sounds like the diffusion line of a gun range, these two are a class act, linked by their glossy manes, nostalgia for the lost magic of air travel, a mania for handing out tiny meals at altitude, and Barreto's matching slow zooms. In a way that could be creepy in less assured hands than Candice Bergen's, Sally surprises Donna as the latter walks out of the former's animal print-lined bathroom. Donna has just been admiring a collection of red and green aeroplane-shaped soaps and is understandably overwhelmed. Sally takes Donna to look at her walk-in wardrobe. Donna can't believe that one person could own all of these clothes. My thoughts turn, as I'm sure do yours, to moth management. Sometimes people ask me what I do, and the correct answer is almost nothing. But if pressed, I might say that I'm a writer. But that is a lie. What I really do is battle moth. How anybody can simultaneously believe in a loving God and moth is beyond my comprehension. The savagery of moth is chilling. The only way to beat the bastards is to encase everything you own in plastic and suck out all the air. You have to live like a budget astronaut. But the alternative is that the bastards win. Do you realise that moth mouths are so deformed they don't eat? They take in all the nourishment they need for their ghastly lives while they're in the larval stage. What kind of animal doesn't snack? Moth don't snack. What kind of monster eats cravats? Moth eat cravats. Sally tells Donna she senses a hunger in her. And indeed, both women look hungry. Neither one looks like a complex carbohydrate has passed their lips since the mid-90s. Sally says she once had the same hunger. Hunger for Paris, First Class International. Sally then makes Donna say Paris, First Class International, over and over again, Donna closes her eyes, and the image melts into some iconic stock footage of the City of Lights. The effect is powerful, an auto-suggestive incantation that feels almost ritualistic. Is Barreto echoing Rosemary's Baby, or is the synchronicity accidental? Before we have the chance to realise the question doesn't matter, the movie snaps out of this reverie and into a dizzying sequence in which Mike Myers' John Whitney puts the trainees through their paces. It's a breathless display of presumably improvised zaniness. As if Barreto said, "Mike, we've booked you for 3 days. All of your scene work is either behind a desk or in one or two other indoor locations. We have the script. That's our Bible. But once we get what's on the page, feel free to fly." Some of Whitney's claims, e.g. that he's felt a polar bear's nuts, are completely outlandish, but such fun. The underlying story is so strong, we are free to enjoy the anarchic comedic energy of what already feels like a canonical training montage. The only thing we miss is a reportedly excised set piece about how to handle terrorists, which the filmmakers thought might not play well in a post-Twin Towers world. It's a shame that it was not included on the DVD as a deleted scene so that we could judge for ourselves. It could have helped us all heal. It is probably too much to say that the worst excesses of the Bush regime could have been avoided, but we'll never know what might have been. While Donna takes her work very seriously and, unsurprisingly, excels, Christine struggles. We know that Donna is working hard because she is always taking notes and listens to John Whitney's audio CD, That's Procedure, on her personal headphones. We know Christine isn't working hard because she is always yawning. And it is while giving a pep talk to the sleepy stewardess, perhaps influenced by Ted, that Donna notices something. Christine has taken some of the plain-shaped soaps from the bathroom in Sally Weston's house. Respectfully, but with a tone that conveys the gravity of the situation, Donna confronts Christine, who in turn insists that the soaps are clearly intended to be gifts for guests. Donna lets the matter drop, but another seed of doubt is planted in her private soil. On my first watch of View from the Top, how I envy me then as the film unspools for the first time. I was 120% behind Donna, even though that's mathematically impossible. Christine's claim seems absurd. The soaps weren't wrapped. How could you transport them without compromising their integrity? But on subsequent watches, I've watched at least part of the film every day for 3 years, my position has softened. Let's review. Christine is face down on her bed, crying about how she has no particular talents. Donna, with whom she shares quarters, walks over to the dresser to retrieve a tissue. While there, she looks down at an open drawer and sees an unzipped sponge bag containing perhaps 3 or 4 plain-shaped soaps. Freud might say this was intentional on Christine's part. She wanted to be found out. But let's not get mired down in an explication of Christine's unconscious desires. When Donna asks where Christine got the soaps, Christine immediately says they're from Sally Weston's house. Now, why would she be so ready to admit whence she got them if she thought she was doing something underhand? Donna then makes a judgment. She accuses Christine of stealing. Christine says that these soaps are for guests. Donna counters by saying that they're for guests to use, not take. However, if the soaps are only for use, why would there be so many soaps in the dish? There are 8 soaps in the oddly deep soap dish. Even after heavy soiling, you'd be hard-pressed to get through 2 miniature aeroplane soaps. Also, after using one, are you meant to put it back in the dish containing 7 other soaps? Unless you were to dry that soap, the bottom of that dish is going to waterlog and the other soaps are going to become mush. Also, an aeroplane is a very frustrating shape for a soap to be. Sooner or later, the wings are going to snap off, leaving you with only the fuselage. Do you discard the wings? That makes it look like you're lathering up with a death trap. If Sally Weston had any humanity, she would have only 1 soap on the go at any given time, refreshing the dish regularly. Also, and this needs to be said, why are these soaps so small? If you make anything small, you're implicitly saying, here, take it. If you see a bowl of mini chocolates, I defy you not to scoop up at least 3. This also applies to small fruit, e.g. grapes, please take one. But not large fruit, e.g. a pineapple. keep your stinking hands to yourself. Difficulty arises with medium-sized fruit. You are entitled to take an apple, but it is best to ask permission. A small satsuma take and keep stumm. A mango, even if small, leave. So, where does this leave us? 1. Western, put out these soaps to deliberately entrap. 2. Western has stolen these soaps from her time as a stewardess, stockpiled them, and is now trying to palm them off as her own. 3. Western commissioned these soaps herself. 4. Western bought the soaps. If 1. Western put out these soaps to deliberately entrap is true, she's evil. If 3. Western commissioned these soaps herself is true, she's deranged. Who commissions their own soap solely for their own domestic use? If you are commissioning soap like that, you can't just get a few bars a year. The factory would laugh in your face. You would have to order hundreds, which points to their being essentially promotional items. Unless Western's hand-moulding these soaps herself, in which case, and I don't mean to demean anyone's mental state, she's having a breakdown. With regards to 4, Western bought the soaps. Who the hell sells aeroplane soaps? No one. I've searched extensively online so that I could complete my Sally Western tribute room, and there's nothing. The only available aeroplane soap has received a very negative 1-star review on Amazon, and I quote, "It came broken and overpriced for how tiny it was. Do not order!" 2 exclamation marks. As I feared, there's something inherently problematic with the structure of this genre of soap. So, best guess is 2. Western stole these soaps from her time as a stewardess, stockpiled them, and is now trying to palm them off as her own. Just before she left the profession, Western filled up her carry case. We've all walked through the corridor of a travel tavern, seen one of those trolleys filled with tiny soaps, shampoos, and pens at work for no longer than an hour, checked for visible staff members, trousered as many as possible, and sprinted for the lifts. That's not theft, that's sporting spirit. I now have enough tiny bottles of conditioner to last me till Valhalla. Dear Lord, why would anyone, let alone Sally Western, begrudge anyone taking 7 or 8 bars of novelty aeroplane soap?